dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. And one of the men who is doing as much as anybody to shape our understanding of this war and to cover it in its details is Bill Gertz. He is, of course, the senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon and the author of a prize-winning column at the Washington Times entitled Inside the Ring. Bill, welcome back.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Let us start with Asia. Bill, a lot going on out there at the moment between the North Koreans and the Chinese and Chuck Hagel's visit. Maybe we could start with some of the reporting you've been doing about the buildup of North Korea's missile capabilities and an expected incipient test.
Yes, the North Koreans have resumed saber rattling in response to U.S.-South Korean military exercises, and there are real concerns within the U.S. intelligence community that not so much a nuclear test, another fourth nuclear test, but it looks like they're getting ready to do a long-range missile test, which would again violate UN sanctions that were imposed on Pyongyang for its provocative actions. There are also concerns, again, that any military provocation by the North will trigger some type of South Korean military response, which could unleash a major conflict on the peninsula. They're trying to avoid that. One positive sign was that the Chinese have called in the North Korean ambassador, which is an indication that something is about to happen because they've expressed their concerns about North Korea trying to do something.
Bill, you have been reporting on some rather belligerent behavior of the Chinese as well. Talk a bit about Chinese submarines and what they're doing vis-a-vis Japan.
Yes. We've seen a lot of military incursions by Chinese naval vessels and aircraft into the East China Sea, where there are disputed Senkaku Islands are there. But recently, last month, there was a submarine spotted, believed to be a Chinese submarine, near the island of Okinawa. This, again, is kind of a incremental increase in the kind of saber rattling by China against Japan. And we saw a lot of that during the recent visit to China by Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, where the Chinese general in charge of their defense ministry, General Chang, Wan Cheng, came out and said, it is Japan that is causing trouble, and really blustered and threatened Japan. Also, the head of the Central Military Commission, which is the real power in China, General Fan, said that China was dissatisfied with Hagel's remarks in Japan and Hawaii defending the Japanese. So we're seeing a kind of escalation of rhetoric on the part of the Chinese as it relates to Japan and concerns that China will take some type of military action against Japan or its disputed islands.
Bill Gertz, talk a little bit about the remarks that Chuck Hagel made in China itself in the course of that Asian swing. He, among other things, urged the Chinese to be more responsible towards their neighbors and also talked a bit about a buildup of sorts. I guess it's what's going to pass for the pivot. What did you make of his performance out there? And what did they make of it, more to the point?
Well, the real problem I have with the defense secretary was that he announced at a speech at the People's Liberation Army National Defense University that he had authorized the Pentagon to release strategic doctrine and data on U.S. cyber warfare efforts. This was a unilateral disclosure of our cyber war fighting capabilities. This to an enemy that has made clear that it views the United States as its number one target for cyber warfare. And so this is raising a lot of questions.
Bill, it is actually acting on that view every day.
Yes, yes. The Chinese are engaged in a massive cyber warfare, cyber espionage campaign against the United States. So they're stealing trade secrets and government secrets. And for Hagel to do this, it almost appears to violate the National Defense Authorization Act 2000 restrictions that state that the U.S. in its exchanges with China should do nothing to enhance Chinese military capabilities. And yet, in the efforts of trying to woo the Chinese into closer military relations, this is just the kind of slippery slope that shouldn't be attempted with the Chinese. It's just astounding to me that they would do that.
Well, again, it fits the profile, as we'll be talking about throughout the program, of the concessions being made one way or the other, mostly unilaterally and unreciprocated by this administration in the hopes that somehow people will respond positively. And generally, it seems to reinforce their worst behavior. Bill, just very quickly before we leave China and Hagel, the announcement that some 3 years from now there will be two more Aegis missile defense capable vessels in those West Pacific waters, do you think that really made an impression on the Chinese?
No, it didn't, because it was a good step, and certainly those ships are welcome. But if we were to send five or six more ships, if we were to send, instead of 2,500 Marines to Darwin, Australia, sending 10,000 Marines, those are the kind of signals that will attract the attention and understand that the U.S. is serious about the pivot to Asia. I've got a piece coming out in Commentary Magazine next month, which is basically going to say the pivot is dead. They don't have any money for it. So what it's been reduced to is a series of rhetorical measures and kind of symbolic gestures in order to try and make it appear that the U.S. is really bolstering its military capabilities in Asia, when in fact the military part of it is the least impressive side of it. Instead, they're focusing on diplomatic measures and exercises with alliances, which are important, but certainly don't send the peace through strength signal that needs to be sent with additional military forces. We should be sending, instead of one attack submarine to Guam, we should be sending four. We should be adding two aircraft carrier strike groups, things like that. That's really what needs to be done.
But you have to have the capability to do it, and we're in the business at the moment, it seems, of dismantling such capabilities as we have. A scandal, I'm afraid, and one that few report on as well and as assiduously as you do. Bill Gertz with the Washington Times and Washington Free Beacon. Bill, let me turn to another part of the portfolio that you're covering, and that is what's going on vis-a-vis Ukraine at the moment. You know, we've been sending to this point, as best I can tell, basically just meals ready to eat. I think this is something that's going to a country ready to be eaten day in and day out. We're seeing more and more of that appetite on Vladimir Putin's part. What do you see happening there? And are we going to get more bad behavior out of the Russians, just as we've been getting it out of the Chinese and North Koreans?
Well, I think it's become clear the Russian strategy to take over Ukraine is to use the Crimea as their strategic military base, which they've militarily annexed last month. And now they're sending agents, many of whom are part of the GRU military intelligence service, to foment unrest. And part of that has been to create riots and do things that will create instability. And that can be used as a pretext by Moscow to launch this invasion. We know that there are, you know, upwards of 40,000 to as many as 80,000 troops poised on Ukraine's eastern border. And we've seen indications of unrest there. And the Russians have said that if Russian-speaking Ukrainians are mistreated, that would be a case for them to invade that part of the country. And, of course, the Obama administration is sending all the wrong signals again. They've stuck with financial sanctions and things like that. I reported in Inside the Ring this week that another potential pretext for a Russian action would be the warning from the Russian Foreign Ministry to Ukraine not to sell SS-18 ICBM technology abroad. The major factory for Russia's biggest 10 warhead missile, the SS-18, is located in Dnipropetrovsk, and there are reports that the Chinese and
in Ukraine.
Yes, and that the Chinese are seeking to buy missile technology from that, and the Russians are threatening. That could be another pretext that Moscow could use.
Bill, we have to let it go at that. There's so much more to talk about. We'll look forward to doing so with you again next week. In the meantime, you're reporting at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times, and also, by the way, at Flash Critic, cyber threat news, where you can find Bill's reporting on cyber warfare developments of great moment. It's all deeply appreciated, Bill, as is your contributions to this program each week. Keep it up, sir. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll be talking with Tim Wilson about the unraveling Iranian sanctions and how you can measure it by the shipping that's going down there. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Tim Wilson. I believe this is his first visit as a contributor to our programming, but certainly a friend of many years, a man who I've admired greatly for his service to the United Kingdom, in whose army he served with distinction for 32 years, including in command of a specialist surveillance unit. and as an instructor in that tradecraft. He retired as a lieutenant colonel, and today we find him as a visiting fellow at the Foundation of Defense of Democracies. As it happens, his fabulous bride, who joins us with great regularity, I'm pleased to say, Claudia Rosette, is also associated with FDD as its journalist in residence. Colonel, welcome. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Nice to be with you.
Let us visit, Tim, about the serious and very interesting thinking that you have been doing about the state of sanctions on Iran. The president has assured us that notwithstanding this interim deal and the fact that they don't have a new deal and all the rest of it, that the sanctions are in place and are not coming undone. I gather that your analysis suggests otherwise.
It does. I've been following Iranian shipping in detail for quite a while. I started looking at it when I realized that online you could actually follow merchant fleets quite well from just open source material. And as I say, I've been following it for some years now. And what has become clear recently is that the shipping patterns have changed since Rouhani got elected, and changes again since the JPOA was announced.
This is the Joint Plan of Action, as they call it.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And in particular, over the last couple of months, we've seen the shipping patterns change in such a way that it is apparent that the JPOA relaxation of sanctions has been much greater than I think the State Department had planned
or is letting on at the very least. We're visiting with Tim Wilson. He is a visiting fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, a veteran of the British Armed Forces, and a man who's been studying what is actually happening to the Iranian sanctions by looking at the shipping traffic. And Tim, you were just saying that what's going on here seems to be a serious uptick. Why is that important in terms of both the amount of trade that's being done and the condition of the effort to continue to maintain some kind of pressure on the regime in the absence of its really coming to terms with us on its nuclear weapons program?
Well, Frank, the JPOA was only supposed to give the Iranians a certain amount of relief. They talked about the figure of $7 billion in sanctions relief for the period of the JPOA from January 20th to July 20th. And what in fact has happened is that that figure was based in particular on, for their oil exports, on an average of the figures for last year. Well, it's apparent by looking at the shipping that the average for last year has been pretty much blown out of the water. They were supposed to, last year they averaged 31.7 million barrels per month of shipping capacity moving away from Iran. And over the first 2 months alone, some 69% above that, they exported over 53 million barrels per month.
Wow. Tim, you've written about all of this at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies website with a very important piece about, you can title it, Is Iran on a Path to Exceeding Oil Export Limits? Is it fair to say, based on this analysis of the shipping traffic, if you will, of Iran, that the sanctions against the country more broadly are coming unraveled? That this notion that we're going to be able to, you know, keep a lid on them, that we'll just go back to what we were doing before if it doesn't work out at the end of the 6 months, which is coming up not too far in the future? Or is it your judgment that that somehow all this could be turned around?
Well, I think one of the things to bear in mind here, Frank, is that if the current trend in the shipping continues, they will have blown through what the State Department said that they were going to be allowed to export by mid-May. And that raises the question then of what will the State Department do? I don't know how they're going to react. They may decide that the talks are actually so worthwhile that they're going to carry on anyway.
Oh, I think that's a safe bet, don't you?
I think so, too.
Yeah, count on it. But the main point is we're really seeing kind of, well, I call it national security fraud being perpetrated here.
The degree to which what you've described, Tim Wilson, give us a sense of what the impact is likely to be in terms of life support for the Iranian regime, and therefore for the prospects maintaining any pressure on it to make further concessions on its nuclear weapons program.
Well, I'm absolutely certain, Frank, that the Iranians came to the negotiating table because of extreme internal domestic pressure on their economy. And they were in trouble. For example, their rate of inflation was hitting 40% a year. It's now down to 20% and falling. And that is just this. What I've provided is just one more indicator that generally we've given them far more relief than they actually probably could reasonably have hoped for.
Yeah. Do you think, under these circumstances, Tim, again, based on your own analysis and your monitoring of more broadly what's afoot here, that really there's no shot, no likelihood, no probability to speak of that there will be a cessation of Iran's nuclear ambitions and the program to realize it?
Well, their history of cheating on deals and the fact that they seem to be following very closely the North Korean playbook suggests very strongly that this is all just a time delay effect to achieve, to carry on and allow them to achieve what they want to achieve without U.S. interference and without destroying their economy.
Buying time, on the one hand, and also in a way providing protection against Israel taking action, perhaps as a result of this so-called international consensus developing around the P5 plus one joint plan of action and what might come of it. Tim, let me just conclude by asking you to broaden the lens a little bit. You've mentioned North Korea once or twice. What lessons are there for us if we are serious about putting sanctions on rogue nations, whether it's North Korea, whether it's Syria, or perhaps in the future Iran? The role of trimming their access to this kind of shipping and the transactions that it makes possible.
Considering that that sanctions have actually brought Iran to the table, they obviously have some serious effect. And you can see the major economic effect that sanctions had. And all credit to the way that Treasury brought them in and enforced them. The lesson from that to me is that they can have major effects. But in that case, one has to ask why we haven't used them in other places, such as with North Korea and Syria. It looked as if we did almost nothing about the Syrian crisis, when in fact the option was there to ask Treasury to sanction their ships as well.
Yeah, if we had been serious about it, if we had been serious for that matter about trying to prevent North Korea from pursuing its nuclear ambitions, which have now been realized, and tragically that almost certainly is facilitating, enabling, and otherwise contributing to the Iranian nuclear weapons program, we would almost certainly be curbing their shipping capacity and business practices. I'm sorry that that's not being done, but Tim Wilson, thank you for calling it to our attention as another way of trying to make sanctions more effective in the future, and we may well need to see what we can do to reconstitute them, despite all of this, with respect to Iran before too long. Tim, thank you so much for what you've been doing for the free world in the first instance, in uniform, the United Kingdom, and now with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, Roger Noriega on what's happening in Venezuela and more broadly in our hemisphere, and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk. Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It's a rarity these days that Congress can agree to do anything important. Even more infrequently, do both the Senate and House agree unanimously to do something important? Yet, that happened this week as Senator Ted Cruz secured approval without dissent of legislation barring terrorists from serving as diplomats in this country. This initiative was prompted by the new, supposedly moderate Iranian government's appointment as its UN ambassador, a man who helped hold American diplomatic personnel hostage in Tehran for over 400 days. President Obama has yet to indicate whether he will sign this legislation or otherwise bar Hamid Abutaleibi from entering our country. What is certain, though, is that the Iranian mullahs that would act so contemptuously to us are confident he will not stop them from acquiring nuclear weapons. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
We're back. We're joined by our duty expert on matters involving Latin America, and he is that of many other outfits in Washington, I'm very pleased to say. Not least, his congressional testimony is highly valued and sought after. He is Roger Noriega, the former Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. He also represented our country at the Organization of American States. He is today a visiting fellow with the American Enterprise Institute and a driving force behind a terrific web resource entitled InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Roger, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity.
This is especially timely, I think, Roger, because, of course, we are witnessing some very interesting machinations, shall we say, going on in Venezuela at the moment. Is the Maduro regime's effort to sit down and parley with the opposition, such as it is in that country, mere window dressing designed for Western and foreign consumption, or is there real hope that this might lead to reform in that country and improvement for the lot of life of its people and an end to the threat that the Maduro regime represents?
No, I think what they're trying to do with this guerrilla theater, folks sitting down and making and delivering monologues, is to buy time. Because at the same time, they sent their thugs in to sort of mopping up operations in certain centers of protest. So the regime is buying time, and the whole exercise, which is mediated by a bunch of Cuban stooges in the region, essentially, is to ensure the survival of this repressive regime. And it's amazing that anyone's giving any credence to this exercise, and unfortunately, U.S. policy is being held up apparently to see how this kabuki theater works out, and it's really a shame because the Venezuelan people are going to be consigned to continued misery until there's a change in that regime.
Yeah, well, I guess it's hard to know that we are seeing American policy held up, Roger, because there's not been much of it towards this part of the world and specifically towards Venezuela, as you've documented so well with us week upon week. A couple of things that I wanted to follow up with you on. We had Joseph Humeyer on recently talking about Iran's role in training through the Basij militia of Iran, the so-called colectivos, the militia of Venezuela, who I gather are very much at the forefront of this effort to continue to crack down and roll up the opposition. What is the role of Cuba and of Iran and of these other countries at the moment in the continued repression of the Venezuelan people, Roger?
Well, those thugs, Iran and Cuba, are providing sort of tactical support to their regime, and which is being bankrolled by the other thugs from Beijing and Moscow.
And let's face it, Roger, by our own purchases of oil from the Venezuelan government.
It's exactly a good point. $70 million a day of oil that we're buying from Venezuela that we could easily acquire from other sources, not the least of which build Keystone, and we don't need them at all. But the acute threat to our security, when Iran has a platform from which to recruit and to operate, is practically being overlooked. And what I mean by U.S. policy is let's sanction the thugs who are running that regime, trafficking in drugs, aiding terrorism. Let's do that now. And John Kerry says, no, we're going to wait until this phony negotiation, this phony dialogue plays out. You know, what is it? What is keeping us from protecting our national security?
Right. Well, John Kerry, among other things. Roger Noriega, let me switch gears a little bit. We have quite the spectacle on the Hill this week when Patrick Leahy, a man who has gotten Latin America, among other things, like John Kerry for that matter, massively wrong for decades, took to task, I mean, really in a humiliating way, the current leadership of the U.S. Agency for International Development over an effort that that organization made going back, I guess, back to the Bush administration, we're told, to try to give the people of Cuba, who are also suffering, needless to say, under a repressive regime, an opportunity to communicate amongst themselves, a sort of Cuban Twitter, if you will. Leahy thought this was the dumbest idea he'd ever heard of, and as I say, it seems to be determined to ensure that nothing like this ever happens again. Talk a little bit about what you make of this idea. I don't know if you were involved in it back in the Bush administration or not, but whether it's advisable for us to be trying to foster in this fashion communications capabilities for people under repressive regimes.
Well, I think it's a shame that the administration is running for cover on this thing, because they ought to be proud about this sort of effort to overcome the information blockade that's imposed by the Cuban regime. Like in many other authoritarian or totalitarian regimes, what we were doing there was trying to help Cubans communicate with one another over, by the way, over whatever subject. We weren't pushing content or anything. We were just sort of wiring the country and giving alternatives for people to be able to communicate in an independent way. You know, you have the Cuban government blocking access to the internet in sort of traditional totalitarian fashion. So I think the administration should have taken credit, and I think the big question should be, why is this program stopped? You know, why aren't we doing more things like these, like this? And Senator Leahy, I mean, I think he's not convincing anybody, saying this is the dumbest idea. As a guy that's been in Washington for a decade, it's impossible to think that that this is the dumbest idea, unless he's against freedom for Cuba. And that, you know, if he could save one ounce of indignation for 50 years of repression by the Castro regime, that would be a great thing.
Well, as a man who has a corner on the market of dumb ideas, I've got to tell you that coming from him, it's probably a testimony to the wisdom of doing this kind of thing. One question that came up in the course of the hearings, Roger, and I don't know if you've got any insights into it, was concerns that have been reportedly expressed by some USAID personnel that they're now somehow in greater jeopardy because they are implicated in covert operations and that sort of thing. Was this in fact a covert operation? And what do you say to such individuals about their roles and the importance thereof?
Well, you know, we have classifications of various kinds to protect national security information. In this case, this is information that wasn't covert in any particular way. It just wasn't shared widely, so enemies of freedom couldn't attack those people who were accessing this. And as far as the U.S. officials who were worried about being exposed, you know, tough. They can find another line of work and go join an NGO, which a lot of them think USAID is already. But, you know, the United States has to be the point of the spear in promoting freedom in the world. If we don't do it, no one will. And if these people, you know, they should be proud of what they were doing to help the Cuban people. And sooner rather than later, those people are going to be free, and the American people can take a bow for what we've done to contribute to that.
Amen. Roger Noriega is our guest, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, now with the American Enterprise Institute. And Roger, before we let you go, very quickly, new data is indicating that the Obama administration's pursuit of amnesty and the efforts of activists to prevent further deportations may be having, predictably, the magnet effect for further infusions of people from south of our border, notably from Latin America. What do you make of what's happening there and how it ought to bear in the deliberations of the Congress on this matter?
Well, for the last year or so, there's been a spike in what they call OTMs, other than Mexicans, crossing our southwest border. These are mostly Central American youth. It also says something about, first, the Mexican economy having developed sufficiently to create jobs for our people, but the unrest that I see coming in Central America because of neglect, you know, no help from the United States, as these countries are facing narco-terrorist threat. So, you know, we need to pay more attention to what's going on in the region to prevent this immigration from getting out of control yet again.
Well, it certainly seems to be getting out of control, but it, as I say, it's partly, I think you're right, a function of the malign neglect of the region by our government and the failure to appreciate that people would rather stay home if they have a life there, on the one hand, and this series of incentives that the administration seems determined to create or foster, at least, that would bring still more of them here across borders that remain fundamentally insecure. Roger Noriega, we thank you for your past service to our country and that you're continuing to render, not least through InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Check it out, folks. Very valuable materials there. Roger, thank you. We'll talk with you again next week, I hope. Next up, we will speak with Clifford May. He will be joining us to talk about, among other things, Latin America and the Middle East peace process right after this.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, joined by an old friend and very valued colleague. He is Clifford May. He is the founder and president of a wonderful organization. We spoke with one of his visiting fellows just a few moments ago, namely the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's been in Washington for a long time, involved in both political and policy matters at the highest levels, and his organization contributes mightily, as does he now, I'm very pleased to say, in a new weekly column with a newspaper that I have regarded very highly for a very long time, The Washington Times. Cliff May, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Frank, good to be with you.
I was just talking with Roger Noriega about Latin America, Cliff, and you've recently written about it in the Times, specifically picking up on a theme that Roger often addresses, and that is the kind of vacuum of power that we have helped create there, being filled very much to our detriment as well as that of the people involved. as a result of a lack of attention to the region, let alone real engagement with it. Talk a little bit about that as you see it.
Well, there absolutely is a lack of attention to the region. And as a result, the vacuum that's been created is being filled to a great extent by Iran, of all places, and by Russia, which is planning new military bases in Cuba and Venezuela and Nicaragua, probably, and to a certain extent by China as well. The Iranians are also involved in mining strategic materials that can be used for nuclear weapons. We're ignoring all that, but we're doing more than ignoring all that, because back in the fall, Secretary of State Kerry made a speech in which he said the era of the Monroe Doctrine is over. The Monroe Doctrine being something that James Monroe established in the 19th century, saying essentially, we're going to protect the independence of the countries of Latin America. We're not going to let the Europeans have colonies there or essentially establish that as their sphere of interest and influence. Now, why did Kerry do that? I think he was, again, as we've seen too often, trying to apologize for America's interventionism, America being a bully. But I think it was read in places like Tehran, Moscow, and Beijing as open season, come in. We have no concerns here. Do what you want. It's up for grabs. I think it was a terrible strategic mistake.
You know, it fits the profile. Cliff, we've talked about this before. My 9-word distillation of the Obama doctrine, namely, embolden our enemies, undermine our friends, and diminish our country. And this seems like just another of these examples of gratuitously diminishing the United States as a world power. And just, Cliff, quickly, your sense, Roger was very down on the negotiations or conversations or whatever they are that are going underway in Venezuela now. Do you think this is a sort of Potemkin exercise, buying time for the regime there as he does?
Look, I defer to Roger, but I think that's the most obvious scenario there. Hugo Chavez's heir, Nicolas Maduro, intends to keep the ideology and practices of Chavismo, which is a sort of revolutionary, anti-American, socialist philosophy that has brought terrible damage to Venezuela, and that Hugo Chavez attempted to move around into other parts of the region with some success. And also, Chavez was very much affiliated and aligned with Iran. On what basis? Well, both hate the United States and want to see the American power diminished. I think that's the basis of it. So I'm not optimistic. I think it would be nice, because there's been, as you know, protests and demonstrations and deaths of peaceful protesters going on for many, many weeks now in Venezuela.
Unfortunately, they all share that idea of diminishing the country, don't they, with the Obama administration. Let me just ask you about that, Cliff, because you've written about the sort of mismatch between Vladimir Putin as a hegemon, as you put it, versus, well, the community organizer or peacenik that President Obama seems to be kind of still living out, despite his role as the leader of really the free world. How does this likely sort out, Cliff, switching to another part of the world where we're concerned about the challenges we're facing, say in Ukraine and more broadly in the so-called near abroad of Russia?
Well, it should be fairly obvious. You've got Vladimir Putin, who is power hungry, and you've got Barack Obama, who by his own admission is war weary. When the power hungry meets the war weary, who do you think wins? I don't think it's much of a contest at that point.
Nolo contendere, as they say.
Nolo contendere. Putin is not that hard to understand. When Kerry calls him a 19th century man, he expects Putin to be just embarrassed and shamed that Kerry should think such a thing. And Putin actually thinks there's nothing wrong with being 19th century. There's nothing wrong with being 20th century. There's nothing wrong with being 17th century. He looks back at Russian history and he thinks, look, the czars all had an empire. The commissars all had an empire. Vladimir Putin should have an empire. And he is, at the very least, aiming to reestablish a broad sphere of Russian influence in Eurasia. And how far he goes with that exercise, I don't know. But he may go until he sees some serious pushback. So far, he hasn't. And he may think, if I don't see any pushback, why should I not continue?
Cliff May is our guest. He is the president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. And Cliff, in looking at your bio, one of the things I hadn't remembered was that you actually studied at Leningrad University in Russian language and literature. You've obviously been watching closely for many years the old Soviet empire and now what Putin is trying to put together. Where do you come down on the question of whether or not what we're lurching into is a kind of new Cold War
with Putin, or is it something sort of more of reminiscent of the 19th century clashes of empires and so on?
Well, just a quick footnote. I was at Leningrad State University and overlapped there with Vladimir Putin.
No kidding.
We didn't hang together. It was a big place, and I didn't know whether he would become the head of the country, and he didn't know I'd be here in Washington talking to you today. So, but we did overlap. Henry Kissinger, you and I may not always agree with Henry Kissinger, but he's a very smart guy. He said there's really only two models for the world order. One is you have one hegemon who, for better or worse, kind of runs things, and you know, that's when you have that, or you have this balance of power, maybe balance of terror. What we've had under President Obama is an experiment with a different form of world organization, one that is supposed to be ruled by a community of nations, the international community, according to international norms. I think the most charitable thing we can say is that this experiment has failed. There is no international community of shared norms. The values of the North Korean regime and the values of Denmark really are not terribly close, much as we may wish it to be the case. And so we are in this limbo period. I would say, Cold War or not, we have to understand what's happening in the world. Putin tends to be the hegemon of Eurasia. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, intends to be the nuclear armed terrorist sponsoring hegemon of the Middle East, and China intends to be the hegemon of Asia. And the American administration is looking upon this and refusing to see the reality, much less come up with a strategy for how to deal with it over the years ahead.
Yeah, it is a zero-sum game, as they say in the political science world. For all of those guys, it comes at our expense, and that of, again, the free world more broadly. Cliff May, let me just turn quickly in the remaining minute or so we have with you. Talk a little bit about the Middle East peace process, such as it is. We're told that there's progress being made today towards getting it a new extension into God only knows how much longer a period. Is this going anywhere good? And what is specifically happening vis-a-vis Israel and the U.S. relationship with it?
They may be able to continue the talking. I don't think it goes anywhere. I think it's peace processing, not peacemaking. And I don't think it can go anywhere for a number of reasons. Let me start with this. Mahmoud Abbas was elected in 2005 to a four-year term as president of the Palestinian Authority. That means he's in his ninth or tenth year of that four-year term. Yeah. That should make you question if he were to sign a piece of paper on what authority would he have to make any concessions. Not that he is offering any concessions. And it's also true that while he sort of governs the West Bank, Gaza is governed by a terrorist organization, Hamas. That's not my opinion. That's the U.S. Under federal law, it is designated a terrorist organization, openly committed to Israel's total extinction. And Abbas can't even go to Gaza and sit on the beach and get a tan for the weekend. He dare not set foot there. So again, if he were to sign an agreement, what would it mean? And he wouldn't anyhow, because he knows very well that to do what Anwar Sadat did, which is to sign an agreement with Israel, means you end up like Anwar Sadat ended
sentence.
Up. Yeah, and you're in a puddle of your own blood.
So much more to talk about on that front. As among others, you are a great communicator, my friend. It is always good to have you with us. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.